Music Hacker, welcome back. Ladies, introduce yourselves. Y'all some distinguished guests. So one at a time, don't talk over each other, and if you could harmonize, that's fine. But yeah, introduce yourselves.
Oh, I'm Carrie Ann.
I'm Daisy Chute.
Cool. And so just briefly, so I get to know what kind of, I think I know Daisy, I know a little bit about your story. So Carrie Ann, shoot the shit with us about your career and where you're at. Like, where are you at?
Where am I at? I'm a singer-songwriter. I've been doing my own music for a few years. But before that, I was a musician and singer for many years, but only got the confidence to do my own music publicly in the last few years.
How long were you a singer? So just singing and doing, were you doing cover stuff or were you just?
No, so I've done quite a few things. I was a choral scholar, so I was kind of in the classical world for a bit. And then I did, I went to performing arts school after university and did like a postgrad in dancing, singing and acting. So I did theatre for a while. And then I kind of flirted with a bit of opera for a short while.
Shit.
And then I realised...
Why?
Why? Because I do love opera. I love opera.
No, opera's amazing. I'd probably say a large percent of the stuff that I've sampled in my career as a producer has been opera.
Yeah. I love it. I love it because it's a combination of all the arts and you can be a character and there's everything there. But I realised to do opera, you have to exclude everything else. But I love a variety.
Do you have a big voice?
Big lungs? I suppose so.
Can I answer that?
Yeah.
Carrie Ann has a beautiful voice. She's got one of the biggest ranges I've ever heard.
Really?
Bottom and top, she beats everybody hands down. And her accuracy and her beautiful tone is unmatched.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thanks.
And so now you're doing your own music. Is it pop stuff or is it like...
I'll finish with the little rundown and then you'll know. So I stopped doing the opera thing and I found myself doing backing vocals for sort of indie songwriters and pop artists and stuff. And when I was doing that, I kind of thought, actually, I want to be there. I still do backing vocals for people. I love it because I just love the music.
Yeah.
It kind of gave me the confidence to actually like give it a go myself with my own music.
Yeah.
And so... That's cool. How I ended up. Like, I don't know that I would have ever done my own music in public if I hadn't done the backing vocals.
That's really interesting.
It kind of made me aware of that world. It all was very, like, being brought up, like, very classical and then very theatre. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know how you got into it.
And did you see someone and go, I want to be, like, the person, you know, Axl Rose in it, with the pants, with the foot up on the speaker, the monitor, and just Axl Rose in it?
I always had a secret dream to like be in a rock band.
Of wearing those hot pads. I had a secret dream of wearing Axl Rose's hot pads. So you didn't just see someone. Did you see like a performer and go, yeah, I kind of want to do that?
Well, there was a turning point when I went to my first Glastonbury, and that's what I wanted to do. But I still was in the other world and didn't know how to get there. And probably when I did backing vocals for Luke Sital Singh, I really like his music. It's really beautiful, and I was like, I want to be doing that.
So did you become kind of like known for as the backing singer girl? Or like that, what I mean by that is like that person does killer backing vocals.
I mean, hopefully people.
You need a better Carrie Ann.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, she's very well known for her backing vocals.
Very
but humble. But also because, you know how I don't know if you've seen that film, 20 Feet from Stardom, you know, like often it's about, you know, backing vocals are often better singers than some of the people that they're backing up.
Sure.
You know? And I'd say Carrie Ann is definitely in that category. She's a very good singer. And so obviously she was, you know, she sings backing vocals for lots of people.
Wasn't Sheryl Crow like a massive backing vocalist for some big people? Like lots of people came through that way.
Yeah, Jessie Ware.
Yeah.
And Lucy Rose.
Yeah, wow.
She did them for Bombay Bicycle.
Yeah. That's very cool. I think it's a real cool path then, like to go from one sound and style to completely different. That's really cool.
Yeah, I guess it's like representative of the career I've had, which is like lots of different styles and lots of different genres. So I'm kind of happy just.
But you are working, like you're a working musician person. Like you are, you've been doing jobs, you've been like kind of working your way through the
session
through the
stuff. And we met doing backing vocals for Radiohead in latest album. So that's how that's how we met.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Was that depressing?
I love Radiohead.
I'm just kidding. I love them too. But they will make me want to kill myself one day. But no, that's really cool. Yeah, that's awesome. So where are you then at now? You just did backing vocals for Radiohead. Like, so what about your own stuff? Like, I'm just trying to get an idea before we move on to Daisy's stories. Like, where you kind of like, where you've landed at? Where's your foot at now?
Well, I'm about to put out my first proper single and EP and stuff.
Cool.
Which, let me tell you, it's been such a difficult process.
I can imagine. What was this?
Because I have got three.
If it was easy,
yeah.
Would you have enjoyed it? Would you have stayed for the raid?
I feel like, yeah. If it was easy, I'd have been like, great, this is great.
I think maybe not.
Yeah, maybe the difficulty I think is you what makes been, it worth it.
It sounds like you're someone who looks, you know, for a challenge.
Yeah.
And I think if it was super easy, and in the reality of what happens afterwards, I think would have made you want to move to something else.
Mm.
But so you're about to release a single?
Yeah.
Single or EP or
single.
Just one song?
There's five songs in the EP, and the plan is to release one song per month. And then
so five across the month?
EP at the end.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's, so, okay, cool.
I don't know if it's a great idea, but that's the idea as it is right now.
It's got something. It seems like it's half an idea.
I mean, I know 0-1 did
it. It could be 12, and then you've got a year. Okay.
Well, that's the O-Wonder thing, right? They No, I'm not trying to copy O-Wonder. They released one song per month for a year
a great
and then
idea.
Did an album. And that's not
especially
trying to copy
especially if you're
that.
Doing a video a day, running up to... If you're putting out content a day and at the end dropping a single...
Yeah.
Easy game. For sure. Then you're gonna do real well.
Mm-hmm.
No PR companies needed at that point.
Well, this is my big query right now, whether to get a PR
pay
or not.
People money to basically waste your time. Pay people money to get you on radio. Who's listening to radio? You know, pay people money to tell you that they're going to direct market you. Ask them who do you think the direct market is then. Just ask them questions about, before you ever go with a PR agency, like you've most likely seen the insides of many PR agencies, just ask them questions. Like they'll say, like, oh, tell us, you know, this and that. Like, no, you should say, like, what can I get for this $1,500 I'm going to pay per month here? What do you do? Where do you put me? How many numbers am I going to get? You know, what can you guarantee me? And they'll first off go, well, there's no guarantees. Well, then go fuck yourself. What business in the world has that? There's no guarantees. Like, so I'm paying you money and you can't do anything for me. So catch you later, right?
Yeah,
and there goes PR companies,
this
you know?
This weekend I sat down with my brother who he runs a small business and he's good at this. And he said to me, like, what's your goal? What's your target? What do you hope to achieve? If you're going to use a PR company, you need to have measurable targets. You need to say, you need to call them regularly and you need to say, have you achieved it? What are you doing for me? If you haven't achieved it, when are you going to achieve it?
And
I was like, I would never have done that.
He's 100% right, but the time it would take you to be babying and parenting a company who have got, by the way, on the same month you've got, like you'll see that, you know, when you're a signed artist, you'll see like, all these PR companies have the same amounts, right? 20 artists who are all got this week's release window, you know, and so they're not working specifically, you know what I mean? So it ends up being like you end up babying people, you know, chasing up waste. It's basically a waste of money, like, straight up. There's way better strategies. We'll go into
my strategies. Big issue with it is just I just don't have time to do all of it. I don't have time to do all the PR, all the social media, all the content,
but there's a way of getting around all that
and work.
Well, and work. That's what I call the hump, the first hump to get over. But there's a way to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mrs. Daisy.
Sorry, I've been hugging
Miss
the mic.
Mrs. Daisy, shoot. So,
Mrs. Daisy, married to myself.
Married to oneself is actually a very privileged position to be in.
I agree.
It's very lonely, though. When you're a Mrs. and Mrs. Gavin. So you've had an interesting one. We've probably had the most similar then experiences. So you were signed to Universal.
Mm-hmm.
You were in a group called All Angels.
Yep.
Girl group. And this was signed in what year?
2006.
2006. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So I came out of my deal with Sony in 2005.
Right.
And so that was what they called, the 2001 to 2005 was called the last days of Rome. Yeah. That was the...
Wait, your last days or the last
the
days?
The last days of Rome, where A&Rs were still doing all the coke and parties were just, you know, going till like... They were missing a whole day because they're partying a whole day.
Sounds great.
Cabs.
I don't do drugs.
Cabs. Paying for cabs going everywhere. You know, like everything just on expenses. Yeah. The company's budget's ballooning. You know, last days of Rome. Basically, no one knows what the fuck they're doing. No one has any idea. No one has really grasped on the idea of that this monster, this giant that's been awakened called downloading, like it's gonna destroy them, and they're all just kind of fucking around. Mm-hmm. Most of the artists are kind of getting a little bit weary to it, seeing where things are going because venues are starting to change. Like, so the last days of Rome, bricks are falling around. Mm-hmm.
That's a good analogy for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then, so the next one is. God, what would you call it? I'm looking for a new analogy for that one, but because it was like post-war, you know, post-war, World War II, like the Depression.
Right.
Really? That's when you ended up going in. As a girl band.
Yeah.
So... Very tough time as well, because obviously all of the girl band stuff that was being funneled through reality TV shows, really the markets were dying for it, dead to it, you know, because social media starting to become a little more prominent, viral starts to happen.
Yeah.
So all these things are up against artists. So what the fuck was it like then being in that situation?
Wow. How to answer that?
With honesty.
Well, yeah. Okay, so, I mean, it's funny because so many interviews over through that time, my media training basically meant that I always saw a positive spin on everything. So I've never really kind of talked about it negatively before.
Positive spin.
That's your personality because you're a really optimistic person.
Yeah.
So I don't think you... Don't do yourself an injustice.
Yeah. But I always look through rose-tinted glasses and everything. So I also remembered those days fondly and think, well, that was a good experience. And it was kind of, sometimes a bit difficult. And as a teenage girl as well.
Shit, how old were you?
I was 17 when I signed.
Wow.
So that was, you know, you're already going through stuff as a teenage girl.
What do you know? What do you know as a human at 17?
Oh, exactly. Like,
what do you know? You know.
Although I was pretty arrogant, I thought.
But
I
that's
knew
why they're. Of course, that doesn't go away. By the way, you get really old, and then you realize you don't know anything. But that's really peculiar because. Well, tell us a little more. Like, so you were. I was going to say, how do you. Take the positive side of seeing an A&R hanging himself out the window, but let's carry on.
Whoa, is that what you had?
No, but I'm saying that, like, it was. I think the average.
Wait, hanging himself like death.
Yeah, I was just kidding. Oh. But the average of.
I thought you meant for funsies.
For funsies, he's hanging himself for funsies.
No, I thought, like, hanging like. Woo-hoo-hoo.
Oh right. Yeah, no A&Rs are that cool. That's way too cool.
That's why I laughed. Sorry, it wasn't funny.
Just hanging out. But
the rose-tinted glasses, you just assumed, right? Okay.
But the average length of an A&R's job started becoming around, like, I mean, I was there when it started to get down. It'd be like you knew these people for like a year and they were on your team. And then it got down to like 8 months, 7 months, and then around that time, I think it was like 6 months for an A&R on average to keep their job.
Wow.
You know, so like it was hard, really hard to be in that business because things are falling apart at such a rate.
Well, I mean, in my experience, because we were in, similar to Carrie-Anne, I come from a choral background, classical background, and so we were in a classical group, which was its own little bubble.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of wasn't trying to, it was sort of trying to be in the pop world. But it was kind of also its own thing, and we had our own audience, as I said in my message, you know, that were kind of older, and so they weren't savvy yet to the
mostly
kind of,
men or women.
Why do you ask?
Couple of
yes, mostly men. Yeah.
Four 17-year-old girls
right.
singing angelic songs.
Yeah. Well, you know, We knew our audience.
You know who the market is. Jeez.
I mean, this is all the machine that was sort of choosing everything, really. Yeah. We were very much, four puppets, really.
And did you know each other, or were you put together?
No, we didn't know each other. We were put together. Yeah. So, which was kind of...
And whose genius idea was this?
Well, so it was a combination between the record company, who'd already had successes with God, I can't
You're trying to call it universal
right
successes?
It was similar bands, but like male versions of the band, yeah, or whatever, you know, that we knew about Il Divo, who were like,
yeah,
you know,
well, yeah,
it was
around that
band.
Time, wasn't
yeah
it?
G4 was one of them, yeah, but I think, again, they weren't necessarily universal. God, I don't know, my... Don't know, I need to...
So that thing happened, yeah, where an act comes through, mm, and in the music industry there's a lot of pressure to get the next thing, and, yeah, instead of now I think they're a little bit different, where when something breaks and it's one specific style, they at that time would jump to get that same thing, mm, but that would be the worst thing you could do,
right,
because once something's kind of hit its tipping point, really they've got the market, there's,
yeah,
no real point going there, mm,
yeah.
But the music industry is full of people copying, right?
Mm. Well, yeah. Like, especially in the major label signed.
Yeah, and I don't get it, because the artists we all love and remember, the ones that achieve legendary iconic status, were the first of that, whatever they did.
Mm. Yeah.
And they can't be copied, or anyone that copied them didn't have longevity.
Yeah. Doesn't stop them from trying.
I guess they could make a buck for a short while, maybe.
Yeah, well, it's a business, so, yeah, you know. When one car is selling well, they try make the same car over and over. But
yeah. Who was? Oh no, I'm going to get it wrong. I shouldn't really talk. We went to a day yesterday with the FAC. Mm. Did a day of talks and, mm-hmm, stuff about being an artist entrepreneur, and they did an analogy of Beatles, the Beatle car in America. They said it had a great market because it was a niche thing. They owned the market, but then they tried to like get in on having a mid-range car and a cheap car, yeah, and then now they have like 17% of the market, and they should have, yeah, just stuck with doing their thing,
yeah,
kind of thing. I'm not sure if that makes, yeah, sense, but like,
it does.
Trying to diversify and go wider.
I think finding your niche is always what you have to do, but it doesn't stop, you know? Like, once you've done something to death, you can't be expected as an artist to make the same record again. Mm. But then you have to find a new niche, like a new leaf of life that makes you really happy to make music again. Mm. You know, rather than like, oh, I'm going to write these same songs a different way. Yeah. You know, it's like...
Yeah, everyone's really harsh, aren't they, about like the sophomore slump and everything.
The what?
The sophomore slump.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's got a lot... It's got
like
a lot to do.
The second album thing where everyone's like, oh, their second album isn't as good as their first album. Yeah. Everyone's going to be harsh no matter what it's like.
Fall victim to the pressures, but yeah. So how many records did you have as
All Angels? We did three.
The three records?
Yeah, yeah. We had a 5-album deal, but we only did three. And
right.
So this is still quite good going, considering, because we were told we might not even release one, so we were kind of very low expectations about the whole thing.
Yeah, which is a horrible thing to, you know, it's good to manage expectations, but to have very low expectations when you get signed to a label tells you right.
Although,
there.
For me, it was never like a dream, because it was kind of, this was somebody else's project and somebody else's baby, and I just kind of happened to be in the right place at the right time. And it wasn't like, I didn't feel any real ownership over the music or anything. Like,
who was writing? Was it writers?
No, it was, we were singing classical pieces, or pop songs in a classical way with arrangements. And eventually I started doing arrangements and had a bit more creative input, and that was a bit more exciting. But it was always something that was a bit of a job, really. But now,
great for fans to hear stuff like that.
Well, you know, sorry. I mean, it was always an enjoyable job, like, but it was just like an extension of singing in choirs.
Yeah.
It was just a smaller group of people.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas now I'm writing songs and it feels like an extension of myself.
And so, so that's a really interesting thing to hear, that a lot of the times artists go through the process of being signed. So a lot of artists would just love to be signed. You know, like, oh, I got saved, you know. But where a lot of people actually go through the process, realize it wasn't really anything, actually I want to make my own stuff. Mm-hmm. And they kind of have to go through that process to get there.
Yeah.
Where the actual being signed wasn't really anything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's just like this kind of, you know, we put it on a pedestal and then we get closer and it's not actually everything that we hoped it was, the kind of mirage in the desert or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was... I don't know, I for a while I thought, no, I just want to do my own thing, I want to have freedom, I just want to create music, and but now I realise how hard it is to do all the stuff on your own.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I kind of think, yeah, I do, I'm grateful for the fact that I had all these people who were working on stuff that I was singing.
But if you turned around at that time when you had loads of people working, because they're working on their product, not your product.
Well, yes,
and if you turned around and said, I'm just going to make my reggae funk soul record now, I'm just going to do my own thing, like, you guys going to work as hard? Like, nope. No one can work for you at that point, you know?
No. That's
so
true.
So now you're making your own stuff. Like, how long have you been making your own stuff? And when you say making, are you writing and recording? Are you producing? What kind of, what's making?
A whole range of things. But yeah, writing and collaborating with people. I've got a producer for this record I'm working on. And he's also quite instrumental. We're writing stuff together for it, and that is but I've been writing for years. I just didn't really have a, similar to you, I didn't really have the confidence in it until recently, or just even then out to know what to do.
Yeah, just knowing what to do is. I mean, that sounds so silly. And now that I've started the process, I see how it goes. Not how you succeed like big, but you know. I mean, it's just like doing open mics and meeting people and becoming part of the scene and part of a community. And
well, let me ask you both this:
why did it take me so long to figure it out?
do you like learning? Like,
yeah,
because it's
wait,
it's,
what learning what?
Like
mathematics.
This, learning how complicated and actually, you know, like all the answers to any questions you probably have are simple. Like, they're really simple, but they're complicated to solve. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, if I implanted, like, genius, like, math talent in your brain, right? And you could just see, it'd be super simple to you. But it would be boring to you. Like, it wouldn't engage you. Mm. It's like Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
He's not engaged by the problems.
Oh, yeah.
And
no,
his life
learning.
Then is a mess. Like, but when you are... actually happy to try work out a problem, then you go through the journey, and that's kind of like what this should be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's taken you guys a bit of time to kind of get on like a path that you both really want to be on.
Mm-hmm.
So are you both not just like, in my head I'm kind of like, are you both not just completely ecstatic that you're kind of on that path?
Yeah definitely. You know? I finally, like, as soon as I started doing my own music, I felt like I was home. Mm-hmm. Like, which, you know, is strange because I was arguably the least successful I'd ever been, in that I was going around doing these open mics and not earning any money from it, but I just felt...
But there's less pressure down
now,
there.
Now I'm home, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, I get to... I just love creating.
Yeah.
Like, creating something new, not trying to do what's already been done. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's
you can go anywhere.
That should be the fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And don't you find it, like, having had, you know, been done what you did and like, you know, you got 3 albums out in the market, like... But not really your ownership, you know? Don't you find it, like, really freeing to be, like, kind of what some people might say square one, but not really square one, because you have, you know, exponential knowledge or whatever, and you have talent, and you now know a path. You know, like, at least... Like, I think that great starting point, square one, it's amazing if you can get there, but you actually know what you want now.
Yeah, completely. It feels like it's sort of a new lease of life. It's like a, I have a second chance of trying... To do it the way that I would do it.
And you're super young still as well. That's the benefit of being 17 and having...
When you started, That's true. Yeah, no, I feel like I'm...
Second career.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, and it does feel like starting
second
over.
Second shot to do it right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it does feel like starting over. Of course, there are things that I can take with me, but, you know, I'm, you know, I was out there doing kind of those sort of smaller gigs too, pub gigs where nobody's listening, and it's like, compared to, like, doing the O2 Arena and, like, you know, having people kind of listen to your every word, it's just, like, a very different experience. But I definitely wanted to have that experience. I wish I'd had that earlier, even. And, but it's there's a confidence, I guess, that knowing another life as well, like, knowing your own success in like, session work as well, like, it kind of helps deal with those situations where you're singing to, like, one person in a room or whatever. You kind of feel like, well,
it's hard.
I know that, you know, I have a thick skin because I know that there are other things that
I think that the best, like, one of the best gigs you can ever have is if, and it seems to be at the time, it's maybe a little bit of pressure off, but I would see it like the pressure is on if there's one person in a room. Because you got to make that person stay there.
Yeah.
It's real hard to be like, I'm the one person watching this. If you can hold that person there, god damn, I think then you start to really grow talent, like skills for crowd stuff there. It's really easy to play a massive big show. How could you lose? How could you fuck up? You know, I think everything you do, you probably could.
I could give it a whirl. But
everything you do is probably not worth it unless there's like a 50-50 chance that, you know, you could completely drop the ball here. Because what's the point? If you can win every game, why play it? You know?
Yeah, that's true. One of the best lessons for me is when you do those gigs where you think nobody's listening.
Yeah.
And then I have like a motto, like if one person enjoyed it, it was worth it. Yeah. And usually... One person.
Let's keep. I'm going to park
what
that.
What if it's you? What if you're the person who enjoyed it?
Okay.
Well, no, because I often have, you know, at the start, I would do a gig like that and I would allow it to get to me during the gig. Like, oh my God.
That's a little nugget right there.
People don't want me to be here. I'm just ruining them. I'm trying to have conversations. I'm ruining it. And then somebody comes over afterwards and said, I really enjoyed it. Or one person said, I'll follow you on Twitter and I came to your gig and it was great. And I'm like,
you're like, stalker. Someone get this motherfucker. Someone get Harvey Weinstein out here. I'm about to get Harvey Weinstein 69.
But I was like, oh wow. So I didn't, you know, you don't have an accurate perception necessarily. Like, people look like they're talking, but if one person enjoys it, it's worth it and it's good to.
If one person enjoys it, they can tell the rest of them to shut the fuck up. Okay, but that little nugget you dropped there was if one person enjoys it, then it was worth it, right? Let's keep that over here. Mm. We'll come back to that in a second.
Okay.
When we talk about marketing. So is there, but before we start, like, what scares you then? Like, what's daunting about what you're about to embark on? What's the big number, like, first, we can go through them, but like, number one, what's the scariest thing right now? That's
I mean, I could give you a long list.
Just one.
So I'll give you the mic.
you take the fucking mic. What's the one thing that's like, oh man, I just can't get my head around this. Like, this is, I don't think it's doable. Or fuck, you know, this keeps coming up. The one thing that gnaws at you. Because normally, once we kill that rat, the rest leave.
I mean, I guess the one thing that worries me is like a really large thing, which is, what if I never get anywhere? Like, doing what I love. Kind of like, what if I put music out and nobody listens and nobody cares?
I'm going to pull the nugget back. I didn't think I was going to have to pull the nugget back this early. What if I never make it? But you just said if you connect with one person.
Know. But what if it's only like a few people, that's not enough to make a career.
Okay, I'm taking the nugget and I'm throwing it off the table, all right?
No, like, I really appreciate those, but I don't know. So my parents are like super supportive, but, you know, a couple of times they've said to me, oh, Carrie-Anne, like, you're just going to keep playing pubs? Is this going to work? Like, how are you going
to... They need to shut the fuck up.
No, they're really supportive. They are, but...
like, you guys need to shut up!
Where are you going with this? Are you just going to keep playing these little pubs? And I'm kind of like, yeah, what if I'm just... That's a great thing,
okay,
but
so that's a really good question, though. Like, where do you want to go with it?
Where is that the question?
Yeah. So... but that's what I'm saying. So you can't say... The problem is... gets dangerous to say, I'm scared I don't go anywhere with it, but I don't know where to go. Do you see the problem? It's like, you really, before you start on a journey, if you have a GPS system and it's going, insert the postcode, and you're going, no, take me there.
Yeah.
And it's going to go, that's not how it works, you fucking idiot. Like, put the postcode in, I got to know where you're going.
Yeah.
You know, so if you don't know where you're going or what you want from it, you know?
I mean, I know what I think this is where I struggle in terms of like making actual measurable targets. I think this is this conversation I was referring to.
Is that about confidence? You're not sure if you're worth what you might dream about?
Maybe.
Oh, I feel like a therapy session's coming on.
Hand the mic across, because we'll come back to that.
Well, you kind of really opened up quite early, and I wasn't even ready for
jeez,
that.
Bro. It's like, whoa.
I know, I'm
way to go deep, man.
I've got to somehow do something just as like, honest.
No, you don't have to.
No, my friend said to me, the thing that's going to undo me is my honesty. he's like, you just tell everyone everything, and then they know how to use it against you.
Oh, wow.
Well, you've got a lot of people around you need to shut the fuck up.
Fuck off, Robert.
I'm joking.
I was talking about Rob, by the way.
Okay. He's very supportive, really. But.
Okay.
Gosh. Yeah, I suppose I have a similar thing. No,
but in all honesty, like, try getting to a point in your head there. Okay. Just like try trigger the thing that comes up constantly.
Okay. What if I've already reached my peak? What if that was the most that anyone will ever hear what I do?
Okay, good. All right, so basically it's kind of a similar thing. It's just you're dealing with fear, all right? But so with you, it's like, I think the easy thing is that I think you could put, how old are you now? You don't want to tell, that's fine, that's fine. It's like I just said to like a woman like, oh, when are you due? What? We're in mother care, I can ask that. It's my sister. She's pregnant, you motherfucker.
I've got two feelings on this. Firstly, I don't believe in age. Like, just think it's silly. Everyone's got a preconception and it's just a number. It doesn't count. But secondly, I also, like, it's a dichotomy in my head.
Tell us that on your birthday.
Luckily, my
birthday's... No presents from us.
Oh, I never get any presents because it's Christmas Eve, so...
If you go around telling people I don't believe in age, how do you expect a present? I'm seeing a lot of contradictions here.
No, it's right. I don't want the presents. It's cool. I'd gladly not celebrate my birthday. It's fine. But also, there's a dichotomy of a fear that I'm too old. Like, you know, the music industry is so geared towards teenagers, and that's one of the PR things. Like, only 16, only 17. I'm like, well, have I left it too late?
Do you think the music industry is geared? So then, to me, making it and getting to where you're going would be then to get a deal. That's a real bad place to go, she'll tell you.
That's not my goal right now.
But then why say the music industry? I'm too old for the music industry. They're not who your target market is or where you're going, or who cares about them?
Yeah.
Let's just do ourselves all a favor and throw the music industry off the table as well.
Yeah.
Like, there is no music industry left. Anyone who's in this day and age who thinks there's a music industry, it's baffling. There's no music industry left.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it's all about D2C, right?
It's a bunch of people who are...
Direct to consumer? Direct to customer?
Of course, yeah. And there's a bunch of people out there who are setting up companies to rip people off and, you know, pretend that it's... Call it distribution. Distribution was always the dumbest word in the game. Like, because it was so easy to do. It was like one company is going to take the CDs around and, like, you know, that was it. It's distributed. You know, and the company who owned the rights was going to hire that company to send the CDs to the stores, right? So that was distribution. There's no distribution. There's never been distribution needed anymore. You can... Any one person can upload a song. It's the internet. It's distributed. It's done, you know? So you just have to find the right place to put your song, and that right place is not going to be a place that's going to basically take massive chunks of your revenue, you know? So then, therefore, get rid of all the streaming sites. Specifically, get rid of Tidal, who have just been exposed as taking millions and millions of views and streams off people to give to Beyonce and Kanye West.
Have they? I didn't see this story.
Just been exposed.
Wow.
Spotify are doing exact same things. A few things are even worse.
Yep.
So streaming platforms, you know, these aren't the ways, right, to now reach your market. Putting a song out and in the market isn't reaching a market. So then the key is reaching the market. But if you, before you even get to there, you have to know what you're kind of like, what you want to achieve. Like, so this is your first record, first EP. So you're not expecting this thing to go like worldwide, or you know you're not expecting massive crazy things.
I wouldn't say no.
But what
enough is coming from one person to the whole world domination.
Yeah, it's like if someone comes and gives me 700,000 people, you know. But so it's just, I think it's simply a case of, you know, you're on your first EP, so how much could you expect? You know, like managing that. Now, that's not to say there's not a way of making that EP blow through the roof, but you're on your first EP.
Yeah.
Like who? So these are this kind of like managing the fear. You know, like of course you got fear. Like with your one of like, how could that even possibly creep into your head as someone who picks up an instrument and can literally just perform at any minute, right? You can just play. So if you can keep playing and just going every day, how can you not get better and better and better? But yeah. I'm guessing you're talking about you've played the O2 Arena. Mm. Like, am I never going to play the O2 Arena again? Mm. Let me ask you this. Do you remember every single second on stage when you were at the O2 Arena? Do you remember seeing people's faces? Do you remember...
No, it wasn't my favourite
The colours
gig.
And... No. Yeah.
My favourite gigs are the ones where I'm just in a room with 50 people. And
exactly.
Yeah.
So what we're starting to narrow in on here are the more important...
Just to hold it there. I feel really like...
So we're narrowing in on the more important things that really matter. So if we get rid of, like, the kind of the concepts of like, well, I need to have a record here because then these people have to listen to it. Mm-hmm. I need this company to come and help me get to market. No, like I need to get on radio. No, like as soon as you start getting rid of all these things and you see statistically no one listens to radio, radio now is picked by algorithms, you know, or the last two major labels who pay money to break the algorithm to get a song ahead, mm-hmm. you know, and then it's just playlisted. And
so radio plug is not a thing anymore then?
They are a thing. They don't do a thing. They are useless.
It's relatively late in my life that I realised that there were radio pluggers that got paid.
But
I thought they were curators that like just did a job but chose what they liked. But actually, they're getting paid by companies to promote a song.
There's no radio DJ anymore.
Yeah,
a radio DJ used to play records and used to pick and you know what I mean. If you go like these, so if we eliminate these things that don't work at all, right, then it kind of frees up like our space of mind. Mm-hmm. And then if you manage the expectation of what you want to achieve mm-hmm. on your first record, then you'll start to see that you don't have a big, massive goal, mm-hmm. right? And it's your first one. So you have to be looking at what, like, you can. If I asked you, you'd probably say, oh, God, I'd want to be doing this and that. But if you're thinking about your third or fourth or fifth record, like, I'm on my 10th, like, I could... If someone asked me, what's your 10th record going to sound like? I'd be like, are you fucking crazy? I'm not going to make 10 records. What the fuck? Shit's hard. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'll probably make 20. Like, every record is different. It's more challenging. You want to go to somewhere else. You want to find new people. Mm. It's a journey. So you kind of like, you're on your first EP.
Yeah.
Like, so your target surely can't be monstrous. It's got to be kind of like, okay, look, if I and I would say changing the types of words that we would say in targets for music now, I would say this is an EP. If I get off this EP 20,000 subscribers, that's fucking good. That's real good.
I'd be really happy with that.
I'd be very happy with that.
Because 20,000 subscribers, yeah. especially if you're starting something. So just like, because we're running out of time, just... really quickly an easy way for you if you were going to do that EP is a 50-day challenge
mm-hmm.
Not a 50-day challenge 5 months, so 5 times 30 is
150.
So you're going to do a 150
day.
So you're going to do a 150-day challenge, right? And so you start at the start, open up a Patreon account, start at the start, and you're saying I'm going to release 4 singles or 5 singles, and at the moment I don't have money to do a video, but with your support, like, I would hopefully do four of these songs will be videos. So join me on Patreon and you start putting up content on YouTube and a little bit extra content on Patreon, and you work towards the targets of releasing this EP on the 5th month, on the 150th day.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have basically created a movie. You've created a target, you're the hero in the movie, and you're working towards the success of just that small, that's a small success.
Mm.
You're releasing an EP, but you've now turned an EP into a movie. You've turned it into a journey. Mm. Now, across 5 months, all those subscribers who come on board, they're going to buy that EP a few times because they're going to want to support you. And on Patreon, remember, Patreon is monthly support.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be giving all the demos away. As an extra tier, you can tier up.
Yeah.
You know, if someone wants to be in the video, you can pay 20 a month or 10 a month. Or, you know, you can tier up so that your turnover by the 5th month might be 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 20 grand. And now you're someone who's... And 20 grand in five
more
months...
More than I've ever earned in a year.
20 grand in 5 months on Patreon is not, like, bonkers.
But so this is a great idea, right? But everyone always says, and then the subscribers will come. Like, will they come? Where are they going to come from?
They will only not come if you don't do it.
Well,
if
this
you don't,
is a good
if you,
point.
If you don't upload.
If you sit at home and you theorize where they'll come from, they certainly won't.
Where are they going to come from?
Yeah, I do.
That's like saying, how does anyone have a friend? How does anyone know anyone?
Well, that is a question I ask.
How can anyone find you if you don't show them?
Yeah.
How do you get to your destination without... So it's basically reverse, mechanisms, basically, you know.
Is Patreon all video-based? I do a lot of art, and so I've got, like, a kind of idea to try and, like, do maybe, like, limited edition, like, lyric
cool.
paintings Very with cool. the thing and, like, make it a bundle yeah. type.
Basically,
but I don't know if Patreon.
You heard it here first.
It's all like video based, so they wouldn't be interested
in
that.
No, it's not. You can put loads of stuff on Patreon. Okay. Patreon is based essentially your store. It's your home hub. You know, like you can. I think it's a better model of a website, unless you want to run your website like that. But they have the setup. Obviously, they take a tiny little bit of the cut. Mm. You know, and there's going to be other sites like that. You can pledge. You know, you can do all these other things. That's the model, by the way, now of funding a record. You know, like there's no other model that works better than that. So that's a really straightforward plan. We can build on that a bit as I want to spend the next 7 minutes, you know, with yours. So what is your plan then? So you're going to release you're building towards?
Building towards it. I've got like, you know, 9 or so tracks ready to drop.
You got 9 tracks ready to drop?
Pretty much.
8. Cool. So why not start dropping them? Like,
I know, right?
Drop, you know.
Like it's hot.
Yeah.
Well, see, I've been sitting on these for a while and it's just trying to figure out what the hell to do.
Are you sitting on them because you're scared you won't make any better?
No. I feel like they're in a good position now, but right. I'm frozen by all the possibilities of different ways of doing things.
This is, I think we share this, like, paralyzed by, we both like learning about the industry and going to these talks and everything, and then you get paralyzed
Stop.
Into where
Don't.
To... Where to begin?
Yeah. Don't go to the talks. Don't go to the talks.
Well, we learned quite a lot. I feel like we learned a bit.
Yeah, but
I probably guarantee you that a lot of what you learned was bullshit. Who goes and gives talks? The people who go and give talks. Who are they?
Let's look.
The one yesterday was good because it was three DIY artists that have.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
It's like DIY
yeah.
artists.
Oh, yeah. DIY stuff all day.
It's all DIY.
What we're both like aspiring to,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, exactly.
But don't go to like any industry stuff. Like,
It's about how to do your own thing and how to run your own. Artist
yeah, because
kind of thing.
Because the end, like, there's all these things that are like illegal, like, you know, like sending demos to record companies and like things like that. They still tell people to do that. You can still submit demos on websites, but it's illegal. You can't, you know, soft send. You can't do that. It's illegal. Like unsolicited demos have always been illegal. You know, you can't send a demo to a record company and then listen to your stuff. They just can't. It's illegal. It has to go through a lawyer or a manager. So, like, there's all these things like that. And yet, at seminars, they'll still stand there and say, yeah, send me a demo too, you know. And it's like, why are you lying, man? Like, you're wasting so many people's energy and time, you know. But you've got these 9 songs. So, what are you looking for a strategy around releasing them?
Totally. Yeah.
Okay, so 9's a good number as well, because I think if you started uploading, you maybe don't even have to do every single day. I would consider the idea of doing... YouTubing, you know, but maybe not. And when I say YouTubing, like, you're not YouTubers. YouTubing for musicians is not like putting a video, cutting it, editing, and doing loads of spending loads of time. YouTube for musicians is more a case of like putting a song up or like performing a song, performing a cover, performing into the camera or speaking. This is what I'm doing today, or, you know, making a journey. Especially if you have 9 songs, and maybe your target is by the time they catch up to the 9 that you've got another 3 and you've got the record ready to drop.
Yeah.
You know, and by the time you get to there, you know, it's more about understanding that at the start it's gonna seem like a lot to do, but you gotta take each month and each like step slowly. Yeah. You know? You've got the music already. So now you just have to kind of even have like things like performing off the top and singing and I was thinking about this and showing people, because they don't need to know you got the 9 songs. So you could just have 1 to
they
them.
They know now, though.
Strategically, you could be like, I'm going to make this album with y'all watching.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take you through the journey of me. It's scary. It's a journey. And it sounds like this is the model that I think now, the number one way to release music is to basically take the power completely yourself, upload on YouTube, DTube as well. As you upload on YouTube, you upload on DTube because DTube is basically YouTube, but it's for cryptocurrency backed. So when you upload a video and it gets watched, it mines the currency. So you make money, and the person who watched the video makes money.
Whoa.
YouTube is YouTube is taking, it forks off the Ethereum blockchain, so it's pretty strong. So YouTube has taken off people's funding, has cut down on how much you can monetize. Now you need 4,000 hours before you can even monetize. You know, all these things. It's like, it's crazy. Like, so while YouTube is kind of taking money away from artists, here comes DTube to fix that problem. Yeah. So it's important to still use YouTube because the market's there, but they will move across very soon. It takes one big artist to move to DTube, bang. And then everyone goes to DTube, you know? Wow. So while you start this process, it's an extra way of funding.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about funding and being conscious of funding with Patreon and DTube and Steemit is just a blog platform, but you can put the video in and then put the lyrics. And then that also makes money. It's also on the Ethereum platform.
Do you need cryptocurrency to start?
No.
But I'm so ignorant.
So your account will have a wallet, and the more you put up, it'll start building the cryptocurrency. And go on DTube tonight when you get home and see some of the videos. You know, you got people who are singing every day on it, and it's like $200, and it just builds up. And because it's a cryptocurrency, it can build as the currency grows. The more people who go on it, the more currency grows. So one day you've got $160 on a video, 6 weeks later, that's like a grand. Do you know what I mean? So that's cryptocurrency. That's the future.
Yeah.
So,
but then it only translates into cryptocurrency. Can you like give it like?
You can cash out. Yeah, you can cash out, or you can cash or invest. So you can buy more cryptocurrency with it, or other cryptocurrencies. You can trade cryptocurrencies, or you can cash out. So you've got your songs, and I would say, don't tell people that you've got all these songs. I would say, I'm gonna do an album. And I want you to come along the journey with me. I don't know what I'm going to do or how I'm going to do it, but, you know, and use these three or four platforms with Patreon is what your main kind of source to get all the subscribers in. Patreon is basically now your website. It's like your hardcore are going to go in there. If you both have 100 people who's ever liked your music, or if you can get 100 people together, make them your super hardcore. And get them to go on Patreon early and say, like, and even if it's a WhatsApp message group, I've got like 100 fans in a WhatsApp message group. And whenever I drop or put something out or I'm doing something, even weeks before or days before, I'll hit them first and be like, so when I drop this, like, start pushing it around for me, you know, and then bang. So you start getting 100 people. Now you've got a street team, 100 people strong. How many labels have 100 people street teams? Not many. So now what we're doing is we're seeing that the way it was broken, we're fixing it, and we can do it ourselves. You know, so now if you're working a job during the day, you can still do, you can, it's just a case of like, you can decide that for your first month, I'm going to do a video or two videos a week. So the algorithms, just quickly on YouTube, and they also back up on other platforms as well. 3 minutes. All right. So if you put up a video a day for a year, so you put up a video a week for a year, so 52 videos, you're looking at coming out with around about 25,000 guaranteed subscribers. That's pretty good in
what?
A year.
If you put up a video a week,
you come up with 25,000.
Even if it's shit.
There's videos on this on how, like, even shit, because it's the consistency of it. Think about how many billions of people are on YouTube, and they just find something, and it's just they want that one thing. Even if it was bad, actually, if it was bad, you'd have a lot more subscribers. Strangely. So I hope either
that's
of you are
a goal
bad.
I can achieve.
I can work with that goal. But then the algorithm really jacks up when you start to do two videos a week. Then you start to get up to 50,000 to 70,000 guaranteed subscribers. You do a video a day, you're talking about you're coming out with guaranteed 100,000 subscribers. At that point, then your Patreon, even if you've got half of them in, your Patreon's going to be turning over way more than 100,000, right? So then you're going to a label. You don't go to labels ever, but at that point, and by the time you get to your third, fourth, fifth, sixth month, press and all these people are coming to you because now you're this person doing this special thing. And all the fans who are on board are like, oh my God, she's going to do it. Do you know what I mean? You've given them a movie for them to live inside. They're a part of your movie. You've empowered people, you know, and you're also having fun because you're, you know, you're working with them. You're showing them how, and also you're kind of being vulnerable with them. You're showing them how things fall apart. You're showing songs that didn't work. I was working on this and you think I should do this. And you actually talk to the crowd. You ask them on Patreon, what do you think I should do next? Any of you guys have any ideas? You actually bring them in.
And you can build all this without paying for any advertising.
No advertising. This is advertising. This is marketing. This is a better marketing structure. So by the end of it, 1 year, this might take 1 year people will say like, oh, that sounds like a lot of work to do. It's not. It's simple. You're going to upload either one video or two videos or three, whatever comes into your head, whatever you want to do. You know, and you plan your releases of the songs ahead of time if you want, but you're basically going to, 1 minute, you're basically going to continue to release, and it's going to kind of have a knock-on effect. All these subscribers will come on board, and by the time you get later in the year, you'll have mad numbers, and everyone will come on board trying to offer record deals. You tell them at that point, go fuck themselves, because you don't need them. Mm-hmm. And you can outsource all of your other things. You can outsource kind of Facebook marketing and Snapchat marketing and then pay-per-click ads and all that. You can do your marketing at that point. First, that's the kind of...
So you have to become okay with vlogging, basically.
Essentially. That was Music Hacker. We're going to run out. We'll do another one. We're going to need to do another one. But yeah. Join us next time. Peace.